From Emmanuel Baptist Church in Highland, California, this is Above and Beyond with Dr. Ben Scott.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to be here. And man, I'm thrilled because, Emmanuel, you are known all across North America, where you realize that or not. There are people in the East and the South and the Midwest that know all about your church and how missions-minded that you are. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One is because you were led for so many years by such a missions-minded pastor and Brother Rob. And also, what an example you are now as you've transitioned and have Pastor Ben. And I just want to say, from the outside looking in, I just want to say thank you to your church for what an incredible example of passing the baton it's been. And also, I've known Rob for many, many years. We've been very good friends. And Ben, I had the privilege of being his pastor for a brief time while I was in seminary. They've been friends for a long time, but my respect for them has grown exponentially over the last 2 years, and for one reason. When I talk privately with Ben, there is not a bigger fan of Pastor Rob Zinn than Ben. And when I talk privately to Brother Rob, there's not a bigger fan of Ben than Pastor Rob. And that's rare. And I just want to thank them and thank you for modeling what this should be. So thank you so much for doing that. Hey, today we're going to be in Mark chapter 2. And if you'll be turning there, it's in the New Testament. I know you know that. Two books in. But as you turn there, I would like, if it's okay, I want to introduce my family to you just real fast. I wasn't able to bring them with me, but I would like to throw a picture up and just give you a real quick. There they are. I'm missing two grandkids because they were just born, all right? It's not because they were ugly. It's just they're real. And my wife, Lynette, we've been married for almost 35 years. I've been very blessed with her. We have six kids and six grandkids. Our two oldest daughters are in the middle. That's their husbands to each side. No need to waste any time there. And then the back right, that's my son, Taylor. He's a student at California Baptist University. Finishes his MBA. Yeah, that's right. One of the finest schools in all of North America, in my opinion. And I'm so thankful that he's there. And get to see him here in just a few hours. And then God bless us with a whole second phase of children, if you will. The very first child we adopted was Libby. Libby's in the back right. She's from China. They found her in a shoebox outside of a police station. And when she's born, we adopted her. When she's one, she's now 18. She graduates in May. It'll be one of the saddest days of my life when she leaves our home. She's really like an angel among us. She's just a sweetheart. And then there's Micah Lynn, second child we adopted from Ethiopia. She's in the middle and to the far left. Micah Lynn was 3 when we got her, and she's almost 16. And she's funny. Normally she has her hand on her hip because that's where she likes it. Have you ever watched the show Sanford and Son? You ever watched that show? Well, we adopted Aunt Esther, all right? And so that was a character who'd come in and just basically boss you around. And that's her spiritual gift, is bossiness. We love her to death. She keeps life pretty active around our house. And then on the far left in the middle is J.M., John Michael. He goes by J.M. He's from the Philippines. And so we got him when he's 12, and he's just turned 21 3 weeks ago. And so we're so thankful. We have six kids. It's real funny. My wife's like, what do you think people think when we walk into a restaurant? I mean, six kids, 4 different countries. And what's funny is in the South, they'll go, well, bless your heart, you know? Heart has like 3 syllables. Bless your heart. And I know what they mean. They mean better you than me. That's what they mean. But I tell them, there's just no need to bless my heart. I'm just very competitive. Now, what I mean is we have 6 kids from 4 different countries. When we watch the Olympics, we win. All right, we do. We do. Every night, it's not a problem. But I would like to tell a little story about JM, though. We went to pick up JM in Manila, and they found JM wandering the streets when he was 5, and we got him when he was 12. He was wandering the streets, picking up plastic bottles, sleeping in the back of a pickup truck. And so he went to this orphanage. They told us, now look, when you take him back to the hotel, he's not used to some of the same luxuries you're used to. There are about 80 kids at this orphanage, and they did not have hot water at the orphanage. They have it in Manila, I know that, but not at this orphanage. He basically took sink baths all those years. And so they said, just be very careful, help him understand it shouldn't be a problem. So we go back to the hotel. You can imagine, we just met JM, 12 years old, rambunctious, and he's in a hotel for the very first time, bouncing on the beds. He's loving it. And I said, hey, JM, it's bath time, and I want to show you something. Come here, buddy. And so we go in the bathroom, and I turn the water on lukewarm. And then I take his hand. I said, let me have your hand. And I took his hand, and I put it underneath that lukewarm water. And then I just gradually turned the water warmer and warmer and warmer until he felt hot water for the very first time. And he's like, that is wonderful. And I said, it is wonderful. You're going to love it. And I said, now look, I'm going to go out there and you take off your clothes and hop in the shower. He said, a shower? What's a shower? Well, they had taught him English. It was a bit broken, but he had never had a shower, so he didn't know what it was. Some things just did not translate. And so I had to explain to him what a shower was. You know, have you ever done that? It's not that easy. It's like it's water from heaven. You're going to love it, you know. It's just some things you just forget when you have those translation problems. It's like the first time we went out to eat. First time we went out to eat, he's not been out to eat. I mean, we're spoiled rotten. Look at you. You're spoiled. Would you not? We are spoiled, aren't we? It's not about if you're going to have lunch, it's just what you're going to have. You're sitting in padded pews, an environmentally controlled room. You're just spoiled rotten. You really are. But we are. We don't think about certain things, but, you know, when it comes to eating out, he'd never eaten out. And so I said, hey, just I'll order for you, buddy. I said, just bring him some chicken fingers. He's like, no! I not eat chicken fingers. And I said, no, 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 son, they're not chicken fingers. That's just what they call them. He said, well, why do they call them that? I was like, you know, I don't know. Just dip them in barbecue sauce. It'll be all right. And you can only imagine the next night we had buffalo wings. I mean, it's just like, oh, my gosh, the explanations we have to have. But there's so many things you take for granted. I'll never forget, though, when he came out of that shower, smelling really good, but all shriveled up about 20 minutes later. And he said, Dad, that was wonderful. And I thought, you know, how many people, much less how many 12-year-olds, are thankful for hot water? I mean, we're just not. The fact is, I think we'd all admit, we get so used to some things, we just take it for granted. That amongst others. Hey, sir, in the vest there. What's your name? All right. Hey, what was it?
Mo.
All right. Sorry to wake you up, Mo. Hey, Mo. Hey, Mo. I want to ask you. Now, I picked you because you look like the cleanest guy in this section. All right? So, Mo, be honest with me. All right? Now, you had a shower in the last 3 days. Yeah. Okay. Now, Mo, be honest. Now, when you took that shower and you felt that hot water, did you go like, yes, hot water? Did you do that?
No.
That's what I thought, you know? You see, folks, Mo, Mo's what's wrong with America, all right? I'm teasing with you, sort of, Mo. But, no, Mo, you're just like the rest of us. We didn't think twice about it either. We just are spoiled. The same thing is true when it comes to churches. When Pastor Ben said, we partner with you to plant churches. We help churches plant churches and do more together than we can do on our own. And there's a desperate need for churches. You might think, well, it seems like there's plenty of churches to me. I mean, quite honestly, do we really need any more? It's because you're spoiled, all right? It's not like it is everywhere. Look, you're spoiled in the fact that you go to this church. It's not like it is here everywhere else. It's not. I go everywhere else, and it's not like it is. So you need to appreciate what you have, but also understand it's not like it is here. Let me give you some examples. Did you know in Mississippi is the most church state in all of North America. There are one church for every 1,394 people in Mississippi. That's Southern Baptist churches. I mean, it's got a lot of them. We wish every state was like that, if you will. Missiologists say you need one church for every 2,000 people if you really want to reach a community. So you say, well, what's it like in California? In California, there's one for every 17,000. So there's a real need. That's why we partner with your church and others to plant churches all over California. But not just in California. If you go to somewhere like New York, in New York is one for every 51,000. And then you go to New Jersey, it's just a little bit higher, and 58,000. But if you go to Canada, In Canada, there's one for every 94,000 people. You can drive, did you know in Canada, you can drive for 3 hours and not drive by another evangelical church? For 3 hours. It's just incredible the need there. So I just want to say thank you for partnering with us to plant churches all over North America. 100% of what you invest in those mission offerings that is given to the North American Mission Board go to do that and to evangelize North America. So thank you. In Mark chapter 2, it talks about the importance of being very focused on your next missional step and doing whatever it takes to get the gospel. Hey, look, I want you to really listen to this. If you're a member here or you attend here regularly, you're a part of a very missions-minded church, and you're known to be that for years. And you've been led in the past and are led currently by a very missions-minded pastor. But because of that, you're what I would call at risk, all right, or in a very dangerous situation. And what I mean by that is, in all due respect, when you're a part of a missions-minded church that's very evangelistic, you can feel missions-minded and feel evangelistic and not be, just because you're around it so much and you think that you're doing it. I love the video you showed at the very beginning of the service, is when he was sharing about his one, and you hear different things in those songs we sing, everything about what we're doing, about reaching, getting the gospel out, and you feel like, man, yeah, we're doing it. And the whole time, yes, your church is doing it, but today I want to ask, be very specific, or it's about to be tax season, we want to itemize here and say, are you doing it? I mean, who is your one? What is God using you to do? You see, God put you here to do more than draw a breath and draw a salary. He really did. And when it's all said and done, man, are you fulfilling what God put you here? In Mark chapter 2, I love this passage. One, because it's in the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark's my favorite gospel. Why? Because Mark, I'm convinced, has an attention disorder. Okay? And I do too. My wife says it all the time. She gets so frustrated with me. She'll say, hey, did so-and-so have a baby? And I said, yeah, they had a baby. She said, boy or girl? And I was like, it is a baby. How much did it weigh? I don't know. It was a baby. All right? I'm 30,000 feet. I don't do the details. And that's how Mark is. What I mean is, he'll go for 10 to 12 verses, and then boom, he changes the subject. He'll go for another 7 or 8 verses, and boom, he changes the subject. When Mark tells a story, it's much like you taking a rock on a pond and you skip it, and it just hits every. So that's how Mark tells the story. He doesn't go into great detail. If you want detail, you go to Luke or Matthew or John, but typically Mark just flies at 30,000 feet and gives you bits and pieces of it. Well, I want to read that, and we're going to go back and walk ourselves through it, all right? And just kind of as it just unfolds so we can draw what we need to do with our next missional step. Let's look at Mark chapter 2 and verse 1. It says, when he, being Jesus, had come back to Capernaum, several days afterward, it was heard that he was at home, and many were gathered together so that there was no room, not even near the door. What they're simply saying is they were jam-packed in there. There was no way to get anyone else in there. And he was doing what? Preaching the word to them. And they came, bringing to him a paralytic carried by 4 men. Being unable to get to him because of the crowd, they removed the roof above him. And when they had dug an opening, they let down the pallet on which the paralytic was lying. And Jesus, seeing who? Their faith, said to the paralytic, son, your sins are forgiven. But some of the scribes were sitting there and reasoning in their hearts. I always get a kick when I get to this part, because every time I pastored a church, I always had people that were like this. They would think to themselves, or reasoning in their hearts. I mean, they're being disgruntled underneath their breath. You know what I mean? Every church I pastored, I always had people that I truly believe they thought criticism was a spiritual gift. You know? And it's like, hey, stand up, brother. I feel like you just want to lead a word of criticism. Just stand up. That's what they're saying. Why does this man speak that way? He's blaspheming. Who can forgive sins but God alone? Immediately, Jesus, being aware in his spirit that they were reasoning that within themselves, said to them, why are you reasoning about these things in your heart? He knew what they were thinking. You know, I'm so glad today I don't know what you're thinking, all right? Like, I wish Brother Ben was out. And I get that, but here we go. Which is easier to say to the paralytic, your sins are forgiven, or to say, get up, pick up your pallet, and walk? But so that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. He wanted to know, look, I want you to understand, the most important thing here is I have the authority on earth to forgive sins. What he's trying to help them say is, you're about to see a guy healed. This guy's healed. But that's physically. And what he meant, look, I healed him, but eventually he's going to die. What I'm talking about is something far greater than that. Forgive him of his sins, spiritually speaking, that will never pass away. This, temporary. That, permanent. You get it? So he's saying, look, I have the authority on earth to forgive sins. And then notice, he turned to the paralytic and says, get up, pick up your pallet and walk. But so that you may know that the Son of Man has the authority on earth to forgive sins. Oh, there we go. And he got up immediately, picked up the pallet, and went out in the sight of everyone, so that they were all amazed and were glorifying God, saying, help me say this last part. You ready? Here we go. We have all right, let's do it one more time with a little bit more oomph behind it. Here we go. Right? We have never seen anything like this. All right, I love that phrase. It's easy for me. I'm a Kentucky fan. We say this after every touchdown. We've never seen anything like this before. Can you imagine leaving the service and saying, you know, I've been many times, but I have never seen anything like this before. That's exactly what happened. So let's take this story. Let's rewind back to the very beginning and walk ourselves through it. You ready? Here we go. First of all, they're in the house. The place is jam-packed. You can't get anybody else in. Overflow is overflowing. And Jesus is preaching the word to them. But meanwhile, on the other side of town, there's a guy, at least one guy, has got an idea. He says, you know, I've heard of what Jesus has done in other towns and cities and how Jesus heals people. I've heard all about what he's done. And, you know, I'm convinced if we get our friend, and I'm sure he called him by name. Mark calls him the paralytic. I'm sure these guys called him by name because Mark doesn't do details. Let's go get him. And if we can get him to Jesus, Jesus can change his life. He knew that, hey, we can't change his life. No one else can change his life, but Jesus can. You in? I need some other guys. You good? Okay, you good? And we just know he got at least four, all right? There's at least three other guys beside himself, four guys, because it said that he was carried by four men. We know that. So he said, all right, let's meet at a certain time, certain place. We'll go pick him up and we'll carry him there. Okay, we're all in. They get him, they pick him up, they get there. And what happens? They get there and the place is packed. You can't get in. So what do? They have to go to plan B. I get a kick when I read this because I told you Mark doesn't do details. And as he reads it, Mark simply says, here comes a paralytic carried by four men. They can't get a seat, so they take him up to the roof. They dig a hole in the roof. They lure him through the roof, and Jesus heals him. I mean, Mark acts like this happens every Sunday, all right? So let's just slow her down a bit, Mark. Back. Let's just think through this. They get there with their friend, and the place is packed. They had to have a conversation. I'm sure one guy's like, my word. Look, the place is jam-packed. I never anticipated this. I know those people. They're not going to give up their seats. What do you think we should do? And I'm sure one person kind of spoke up, and did you know, my degree was in psychology. One thing I learned in psychology was that at least one out of four people tend to be negative. All right? Now, don't point. But one out of four people tend to be somewhat negative. You know what I mean? Like they round down, like Eeyore, you know? Like, it's sunny, but it may rain. You know, it's one of those just negative. Well, I'm sure when they said, hey, what do you think we should do? The negative guy probably spoke up and says, I knew this wasn't a good idea. Or we should have come to the early service. Or, you know, you can only imagine the negativity rolling out of there. But all we do know, what we do know is that at least one guy had an idea. One guy had an idea, had to have, and said, hey, fellas, I got an idea. Now, here's what we're going to do. All we're going to do is we're going to take him and we're going to put him on the roof. I can't help but think the paralytic probably said, do what? And I was like, no, trust us. Trust us. We're going to put you on the roof, and then we're going to kind of guess where we think Jesus is. And then we're going to dig a hole. We're going to dig a big hole. And then we're going to lower you down to where Jesus is, and boom, he's going to heal you. What do you think? I'm sure that one guy probably said, but we've never done it that way here before, you know? Some type of negative. That's exactly what they do. So they get him up on the roof. I can't wait to ask him one day in heaven, like, how did you do that? They got him up on the roof, and they begin to dig a hole. Now, Mark flies right over this. I think this is hilarious. They dig a hole while Jesus is preaching the word to them. Can you imagine next Sunday, just before Mo goes to sleep, some dust begins to fall. Some more dust begin to fall. And then all of a sudden, right there, a hand comes through that ceiling. And another hand. And another, I don't care how good, I know Ben's, you know, intelligent and eloquent, and all, but I don't care how good that is. I'm watching that, all right? And all of a sudden, a hole appears, another hole, and then four heads all up down, you know? All right, Cletus, lower him down. And they lower him down. And then do you remember what the passage said? Mark tells us, Jesus sing. Their faith healed him. Jesus, seeing their faith, healed him. I have to think about that. You think it was just because he looked up and was like, oh my gosh, look at my word, there's four guys up there. Now, I think when he talked about his faith, I really think he can reel it all the way back to had faith and willing enough to be inconvenienced to go out of their way to get him to start with. That their faith was all enough to, when they got there and they saw the place was packed, that they had the faith to do something anyway. You know, we don't know these guys' names. You look in there, their names aren't in there. But we know the passion of their heart. And the passion of their heart is whatever it takes. Man, can you say that with me? Whatever it takes. God has placed you here to reach this community and the ends of the world with the gospel because Jesus saves. How are we to do that? Whatever it takes. How much should we give? Well, whatever it takes. How many trips should we take? Well, whatever it takes. We have a generation of just very sissy church members that are very easily distracted and talk themselves out of things. When God is a God of faith and says, look, I want you to learn to do, he says, when he saw their faith, he did something miraculous. He healed the guy. I also want you to notice a little part of the story is Jesus heals him. And there's some religious leaders there, some scribes. That's what it said. They're religious leaders. They were thinking to themselves. They were criticizing. I mean, Jesus heals a guy, and these people are ticked. Isn't it typical? Like when God does something extraordinary, there's someone who's always seems to be pushing back on it, thinking, well, who does he think he is? Well, look, why does it matter? You know, Jesus saves. He heals, and a guy's life's just been changed. I had a lady in my very first church, a full-time church named Novella. Novella. I almost said her last name. I don't want to say that. But she was mean, all right? Now, Novella followed me to every church I ever pastored. No, not literally. I'm just about another name. There was always a guy or a woman who was like this woman, all right? She was mean. Well, my wife, if she wanted my wife's attention, she would actually tug on the back of her hair. No, it's how ridiculous. If you ever do that, man, I just pray you drop and turn to a pillar of salt. That's terrible, all right? But that's ridiculous. But she just mean. She always complained. I was never this, never that. Well, we had a special speaker that day, and we had two people saved, and about three or four people joined the church. I mean, it was a great day, and I didn't preach, so I thought, oh, here comes Miss Novella, and she has to be happy today, you know? And so I couldn't wait to see her come through the line. I said, hey, Miss Novella, great day, wasn't it? She said, I guess so. But the flags are on the wrong side. And I do what? And what happened is the kids had done a program, and the Christian flag and the American flag happened to be switched and were on the wrong side technically. And so I not had a lot of pastoral training. And so it just kind of came out. It's like, Miss Novella, who gives a rip? I said, there were people saved today. That's what's most important. You know, sometimes it's easy for us to get distracted on things that are not that important. These guys said, reasoning in their hearts, who does he think he is? And Jesus says, I'll tell you who I am. I have the authority to forgive sins. God himself. That's who I am. But what's this? I'm going to show out so that these people's faith can be, because of their faith, I'm going to do this. Man, I love that story, and I love these guys. You know why? Look, if you own a business, you want one of these four guys working for you. If you're a coach, you want one of these four guys on your team. Why? Because it's whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. I was in Cuba several years ago, back when Castro was still living. And interesting thing, when I was asking them, the reason that I was in Cuba is because you may not realize this. This is a crazy thing. That you own the majority of the churches in Cuba. Do you know that? You do. And the reason I know that is because the deeds to those homes are in the safe at the North American Mission Board. There was a lady named Annie Armstrong that went around and actually purchased different facilities in Cuba. And we keep those deeds. And the reason I was even there is telling the pastors, if you ever want these deeds back, let us know. But they didn't, because they're afraid that Castro would take the deeds from them and they lose their property. So it was really more of a protection for them. But I love talking to those pastors. And when I asked them what they needed, just with tears in their eyes, they told me the stories. They look, God has started a church planting movement in Cuba. And I said, well, how did that happen? They said, it's incredible. I said, back when Castro took over, all these regulations came down. It was incredibly restrictive. And we thought it was going to hurt the church. He wouldn't let us build any more churches, wouldn't let us even add a bathroom onto a church. And he said, you can't build any more churches, but you can meet in your homes. So we met in our homes. But then he came out with this national edict and says, no more. When you meet in your homes, only 50. You can only have 50 in your home, because they were just jamming people in these homes. Once you get to 50, you have to go start another one somewhere else. Like seriously? And that's exactly what they did. Castro was trying to think, I'll spread these people out. I'll spread them out and just dilute them, and they'll go away. So they began to grow, and it frustrated him, and he came out with a second edict and said, no more than 25. When you get to 25, you have to go start another one. What he, unintended consequence of this was basically he personally made them, whether they wanted to or not, multiply themselves, and now there are thousands of churches all over Cuba. And that's why this pastor was weeping, saying, God has started a church planting movement in Cuba. and he used a communist leader to do it. You know, I've told people many times, if I ever get to pastor again, this is when Castro was living, I said, I'm going to get Castro to be my education minister. Because it will take a communist leader to get some Sunday school classes to multiply. You know what I mean? But it's amazing. What I love about this story is Jesus turns back to the paralytic and says, hey, buddy, look, do this. Take your mat and you go on home. You know what? It's funny because that's Mark ends it. That's it. They left there saying, we've never seen anything like this before. Then he goes on to the next story. Mark does. But tell me, Mark, what happened? Can you imagine what happened? I mean, you think the paralytic put his mat underneath his arm, walked home, and went in the door and says, hey, what's for supper? No. He left there being carried before men. He comes back. They had to perhaps say, what happened? Can you imagine that explanation as he tried to explain to them what happened? We don't know. I'm not trying to add to Scripture. But I believe it had to go something like probably how the blind man explained his situation. I'm sure he says something like this. Hey, I don't know exactly all of the details of how this happened. All I know is Jesus did it. Amen. Jesus did it. We can't explain all that happens. We can't explain the transformation that happens in people's lives. All I know is Jesus did it. Jesus saves. And that's why we must live it as the kids' song said. And it's all for His glory, not ours. Gypsy Smith was once asked, how do you start revival? And he says, it's real simple. You draw a circle with a piece of chalk. And you get down on your knees inside that circle and pray that God would start a revival in that circle. His point was, it starts with you. So often say, well, you know, I'm going to find me a church, or, you know, if a pastor did this, or if I had a minister did this, but really, it comes down to you. One final story. There's a guy named Bill. Bill worked for South Central Bell. He used to install phones when they had to be installed. He went to a home to install the phone and began to talk to a young man named Mike and his wife, Glenda. He talked about the phone and all that, but it was really all a stepping stone so he could have a gospel conversation. He ended up having a gospel conversation with this young father. He had three kids. And that gospel conversation ended up where Mike prayed to receive Christ because of Bill's witness. And then Mike was baptized, his wife was baptized. And you know what's amazing? Everything in their house changed. How he talked to his wife, what they did on weekends, where they went on Sundays, everything changed because of Bill's witness to Mike. Now, I know that because Mike was my dad. I was 5 when that happened. I still remember standing in the pew watching my dad be baptized because of Bill's witness. Everything changed in our house. My dad grew up in an alcoholic home and not one church. They lived actually in the shadow of a steeple and never, ever attended. But everything changed. You know what? I have 6 kids. I just showed you. Their lives have been changed because some guy named Bill, I've never met, shared the gospel with my dad, Mike, who's in heaven today because of Bill. My grandkids, all 6, their lives will be influenced by a guy named Bill that they've never met. My point is this. You have one life to live. One life to live. Make it count. And what is your next missional step? God loved you so much, He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. God has provided a way for you to have a relationship with Him. It's by His grace that we're saved, not of works, lest any man should boast. If you don't have a relationship with Christ today, man, we're going to have a time of response where you have the opportunity to make that decision. There are going to be staff and counselors here that would love to pray with you about taking that next mission. They're not going to embarrass you in any way. They just want to help you. After the service, there's a pastor's reception on the far right. We love your far left. We'd love to just share with you about how to take that next missional step. But maybe you're a believer today. And I'm not saying you go from in one day you become the Apostle Paul, but I'm just saying take the next missional step. What is the next? Well, you can just grow and take that next step to get out of the pew and into action. And that's why God placed you here, to make a difference. Who is your one? I'm thankful for Bill. Can't wait to tell him that day, one day when I get to meet him. But I just pray that many of us will be Bill to many others, fathers and mothers. Father, thank you.
For a copy of the sermon, call 909-425-1777, extension 1401, or you can check out our website at ibzhighland.org.